Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, back on the Jeff Crockett Show. Let's do this, Chris Harrington.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies, Memphis, and more. Presented by the Majestic Grill. Rediscover downtown dining. Chris Harrington on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris Harrington joins me now. I cannot believe this. There's a song about Connecticut. What are we listening to, Chris?
It might be the only one. It's Connecticut by Judy Garland and Bing Crosby. So at least they've got that going for them. That and the national championship.
Connecticut. There you go. Were you able to watch any of that last night?
Yeah, I watched all of it.
Okay, so... what do you make of here? Rank all these three players will be in the draft. If you were the Grizzlies, your early draft board: Castle, Klingon, Edie. What's the order?
I'm putting Edie third on that list. I think maybe people have gotten higher on Edie over the course of the tournament. I think I'm a little higher on Edie than what people have been in the past. Love the fit for the Grizzlies and where the Grizzlies are going to be picking. Like, I wouldn't really entertain picking him there. I would entertain picking Klingon where the Grizzlies will be picking, definitely. Castle's interesting. Castle is, like, really my kind of player.
Right.
The problem is, I don't know if the Grizzlies, he's not really what the Grizzlies need right now, because there's a lot of overlap between him and Marcus Smart and Vince Williams, I think. You know, in terms of strengths and weaknesses. He's a rugged combo guard type who's a really good, versatile defender, got a good feel for the game, not clear if he can shoot. Like, that's not really, when you think about, like, you know, the things the Grizzlies need right now, like, that's not really high on the list, that kind of player. But at some level, like, the draft is talent acquisition, and I think he's really talented. I'd be a little concerned about the shooting. You always tell yourself, well, they'll get better at shooting, and sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. So I guess I would go Klingon, Castle, Edie, but that's all subject to change, because at some point I'm going to actually write about this stuff, and then, like, I'll find out what I think when I do that.
Well, that's good. What did you watching last night? What did you think about the fit with Klingon?
I think if you didn't watch that game and you looked at the box score, you might conclude, man, Zach Edie roasted Donovan Klingon. Look, he scored like 30 and 20 or whatever he had, like one of those typical Zach Edie box score lines. But when you watch the game, that's not really what happened. I thought Klingon defended him pretty well. He really forced him into tough shots. I mean, he had to make some, like, you know, highly contested, you know, 8-foot jump hook kind of shots and stuff like that. He was not really overpowering Klingon. I think Klingon held his ground and defended him pretty well. Klingon didn't really get going offensively, you know, facing that level of size. It was not as easy for him to just get finishes around the rim the way it was earlier in the tournament. With Klingon, I have not been quite as high as people, especially Grizzlies fans, had gotten. And so his mediocre box score line in that game doesn't really change my mind on him anyway. I mean, my thing with Klingon is that, like, my sort of medium outcome expectation is, like, you know, Jakob Poeltl, Ivica Zubic, guys, you know, decent starting centers in the NBA who most listeners probably have never heard of. Like, I don't see him and think, like, that's the Rudy Gobert-like, you know, franchise center who's going to put the Grizzlies over the top. I look at him and say, they need a guy like that, you know?
One of the, you wouldn't normally think at 7 or 8, which is the likely place where the Grizzlies will be picking, you would want to get a role player, right? Like you would, it's you're in the middle lottery. You should be getting someone with higher ups. But it does feel like with this draft, it's such a, I mean, it's such a crapshoot of a draft that, like, as you point out, if you get Castle who can't shoot, what's that do for you? Like, what, you know, the, like there's, the, it does feel like getting a sure thing or more sure thing who could give you 18 to 22 minutes and bang in this draft, you might feel different about it than other drafts. For example, I saw you tweeted out the Bleacher Report's draft, mock draft that they've put together in the wake of the tournament, and they have the Grizzlies right. taking Ron Holland. Their pro comp is Cam Whitmore, and we don't know what the hell Cam Whitmore is, much less, but yeah. I mean, he'd be a swing, but I don't know. What do you think of Ron Holland?
I haven't spent time with Ron Holland. I have not watched the guys who did not play college basketball yet. I'm going to try to do that between now and the draft. So I don't have a real feel for Ron Holland. You know, it's funny. Sometimes some places list him at 6'6", and some list him at 6'8". I think it kind of matters a little bit, like how tall he actually is. So I don't know. I mean, you can always use like 6'7", 6'8" athletes who can do stuff. And so I'm not dismissive of the idea of Ron Holland. I think there's more broad utility in that kind of player than almost any other kind of player. And it's not like the Grizzlies, like there's no use at all for somebody like that. If he's a 6'8" athlete who can defend, like you can find a role for him. So I don't know. I'll find out how I feel about Ron Holland between now and the draft. But I do think, to your point, the idea of, can this player feel – do we think this player can fill a needed rotation role on our team during his rookie contract, right? You know, not just, you know, this November, but also, like, you know, look at over the course of 2 or 3 years, can this player really contribute to our team in a meaningful way? I think that is something beyond just, like, who's going to be the best player in 10 years. Like, who is there a role for this player to play on our team, you know, over the course of that rookie contract? I do think it's important for the Grizzlies.
Interesting in this, as you pointed out in this mock, the player comp for Kyle Filipowski, and you said this last week, was or 2 weeks ago.
Drove it on the Jeff Hawkins show. Yep.
Santi Aldama is their player comp for Kyle Filipowski. Zach Edey, their player comp, is Jonas. And interesting, Alex Saar, their player comp, is Jaren Jackson Jr.
Yeah, the Jaren Jackson Saar thing has been out there from the jump with him. I kind of drove a Jonas comp for Edey when I was talking to Keith Parrish at the Gasol game. So I did not publicly debut that, but I test drove that with him. He sort of bought what I was selling on that. Like, the thing about Edey is, like, early on you saw like Boban Mavarovich comps or whatever.
Right.
I just think that's nonsense. Like he could fail. Every single one of these guys could fail in the NBA. All of them. Like, the downside with everyone is you can't play and you're a bust. All of them, even Klingon. But the thing with Edey is this: he's not just like some 7'4". Like he's coordinated. He's got touch. He's got post moves. He goes hard. He's got a little bit of that dog in him. He's got a little bit of a mean streak. He might pan out. He might not. But he's not like a sideshow like Boban or whatever. I think like early Jonas, before Jonas developed any kind of outside shot, which is not like he's some great shooter now, but like, you know, he can do it a little bit. Early Jonas was just a big physical guy who will get rebounds and who will do stuff around the rim on both ends, but kind of needs the ball to really be effective. I kind of look at Edey like that.
Before I get to your piece on Jaren, I didn't get to ask you yesterday. You've been a Hog fan for a long time, a Arkansas basketball fan back when you were a wee one, and now you get John Calipari as the head coach. How does this make you feel?
I'm very conflicted about it, at best. Conflicted at best, I would say. I didn't have much of a stomach for Calipari when he was, like, winning big in Memphis. I just didn't. I couldn't stand listening to him.
Right.
It was just offensive to my sensibilities, like, to hear him talk, just because of the BS was so thick.
I just couldn't
deal with it.
Yeah.
And so I don't have a lot of enthusiasm for him. I heard John Martin. I know John wrote a piece for us at Daily Memphian, which I have not gotten to yet, but I heard him on the radio yesterday. Like, John making the case that, like, no, Calipari, like, one is the most vindictive dude on the planet and wants to stick it to people, so he's going to, like, go hard at Arkansas. And I hope that's right for Arkansas' sake, because my concern was that it would be the opposite. It would be, like, the Tubby Smith golden parachute. Like, I'm going to cash out and get some other big deal and sort of fade away. So for Arkansas standpoint, my concern is how hard he's really going to go. From my personal standpoint, I think if they're good, I'm going to try to appreciate them being good and just not read or listen to anything that Calipari says.
I think he's going to go hard. He's got to take a team back into Rupp, you know? He doesn't want to be humiliated. And anyway, we'll see about that. All right, you wrote a piece about Jaren Jackson Jr. We think he may be done for the year. We'll see.
He's on the injury report tonight, so I have a hard time seeing him play again at this point.
Yeah, and the progress that he has made, what he has become this year. I'll take it through the categories we'll summarize them. People can read the piece. I've tweeted it out over at the Daily Memphian. Let's start with usage and availability. How did he do on usage and availability?
If we're going to go through all the different things, let me throw out my central metaphor, which explains that. So in thinking about Jaren, my new central metaphor for Jaren, and maybe it works for no one but me, but thinking about it, it's like the idea of a high-end stereo system, and not that I actually don't have and never owned a high-end stereo system, but you imagine the thing with all the different complicated levels. You got your treble and your bass and your gain and all this complicated stuff. And all the different levels have to be adjusted in a certain way to maximize the quality of the sound. To me, that's kind of the way I think about Jaren's game right now. He does so many different things that getting the right balance of all the levels to maximize his play, I think, has become a tricky thing. It's the definition of a good problem. And I think that my overarching thing this season is that as productive as he's been, I don't think the levels are off. It's like you push some levels way up and that force other levels way down, and I don't think the balance has been quite right.
And that's largely a product of circumstance, right? I mean,
that's almost entirely a product of circumstance.
Right. So on the bright side, he's played a lot like that, and that's been good. Like, one of our big questions was Jaren was durability, right?
Yeah, the early in his career, I mean, he missed a whole full season. Then he had the foot injury that got him off to a slow start, and there were concerns about that. But he's been the one guy who's been out there, basically all season. He was hit 66, and I think if they really wanted to, he could have played more. And he's now, he's sort of, I think 3 years in a row since he's come back from that foot injury, he's been a pretty consistent presence. He's not had a lot of little stuff, and his minutes are up. His minutes are at a career high this year. They're over 32. I think his presence and his durability has definitely been a plus.
When you get to scoring and shooting, this was interesting. On twos, from 59% last year to 50% this year, three-point shooting from 36 last year to 32 this year. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I don't make too much of the three-point shooting. I think it's somewhat of a disappointment that it seems like that second season when he shot 39% on huge volume, that looks like that's going to be an outlier. But the difference between 32 and 36 is a good week, basically a good week or two. So I think, his career number is 35, which is an average number but pretty good for a big. And I think he'll fluctuate around that. He was at 36 last season. I'd like to see him more consistently in the mid-30s and above. That is not the case at the moment. It's really the two-point shooting that I think is more notable. And I think that's where you get to the team situation. When you really dig into that, he is shooting his percentage is lower at the rim than a year ago. But he's also shooting more unassisted shots. So what's happening is he's not getting the dump-offs and the pick-and-roll feeds and the lob passes and all the stuff that guards set up for you.
Right.
He's just creating everything off the dribble. And so the shots are tougher. He's getting to the rim less. He's shooting a very high percentage of shots sort of in the lane, those floater kind of shots. Those are all tough, contested shots. And so right now that's the best the Grizzlies can do a lot of time is Jaren going off the dribble and shooting a highly contested shot, sort of in the paint, but not right at the rim. And I think it's less, it's not that he has gotten worse at making shots. He's probably gotten better, but he's having to take a lot tougher shots this season.
Assist numbers up.
Yeah, I think he's gotten a lot better. I mean, and the fact that the raw assist numbers up, a lot of that is just because the usage is through the roof and he's got the ball all the time. But the assist rate is up in terms of percentage, and I think his turnovers are not up. I'm sorry, I know his turnovers are not up, again, percentage-wise. So I think he's really seeing the floor better. He's gotten more comfortable. making reads, giving the ball up, making, again, not a lot of creative passing, but making like the simple basic plays. And there was one point early in his career where I just thought that's the last piece of the puzzle you never get to is the passing. And we kind of got there this year. That's probably the best. That's probably the really the best thing this year that's sort of new to his game is the more comfortable passing.
Interesting in rebounding a defense that the rebounding rates, he's never been a great rebounder, but the rebounding rates, despite him saying, I got to focus on it, rebounding rates have declined.
Yeah, last year they still weren't good, but they were career highs last year, offense and defense. And they've dropped back down to more like it was early in his career. And I don't know the exact reason for that. There's different things you could point to. I really think that it's the burden he's carrying on offense and the fact that so much of his physical and mental energy is going to other places. I don't think he's an instinctive rebounder. So I think it takes more like deliberate focus for him on the boards. And I just think so much of his focus has had to be elsewhere this season.
And defensively, same.
He's good. He just hasn't been overwhelming. I mean, he was great. The last two seasons, he was like as good as anybody in the league. And one defensive player of the year last year, he was probably as good the season before. And so he's gone from being great to being really good. And I think that is mostly the burden he's been carrying on offense and the environmental stuff. But I think the best Jaren is a Jaren that pushes those defensive levels back up more next season, even if you have to bring the offense levels down. That's
my
opinion.
Expect that he will be great defensively next year? I mean, injuries, whatever.
I do. I think he'll be more impactful defensively next season because I think there'll be a better front court mix around him, and I think they won't need him to do as much on offense usage-wise. So I do expect him to be back firmly in that, all NBA defensive conversation next season.
I skipped over it, but it is interesting. One of the things that people have perpetually fretted about, you much less than anybody else, at least publicly that I know, was fouling. And now his foul rate is basically average for a big man?
Yeah. Well, it depends on how you look at it. His defensive foul rate is 50th percentile, essentially, for a big man. When you factor in other kinds of fouls, maybe it's overall a little bit higher. But for someone who plays as much as he does and who defends as much as he does, it's gotten into a normal range. Normal is still like you foul a lot because like you're a big man who defends a lot, and that's who gets fouls, unless you're Dylan Brooks in the NBA. But Jared's overall foul rate, if you'll hear like fouls per 100 possessions, it started as a rookie at an extremely high level, and it's gone down every full season he's played since. Last season only went down slightly, but this season it took a full, like, half a foul per 100 possession step down. And so this is probably the first season where he stepped down into the range where people should just not worry about it. Yeah. Yes, there'll be games where he picks up fouls, because guess what? He's a big man who defends a lot. He's going to get fouls. But it's in a normal, Jonas Valanciunas has a higher foul rate than him. Jakob Poeltl has a higher foul rate, and lots of dudes have higher foul rates than Jaren now.
In terms of the fine-tuning the high-end stereo system, there's offense, defense, et cetera. But then there's also just, what role will he play? And you pointed out that he ended this season with an offensive flourish, dominating Brook Lopez. It will be interesting what his offensive role is next year, and also where will he be deployed? How will he be deployed?
Yeah, I just think the key is, and Zach Kleinman said this, if people want to listen, he said it, the key is optionality. The key is to be, not to lock Jaren Jackson right. Jr. into one role or one position, but to be able to deploy him in different roles and even different positions based on what is best for the team in a certain matchup, a certain home, in a certain series. And so I'm not that hung up on it. Is Jaren a four? Is Jaren a five? Jaren's both.
Right.
And you need options around him. And that's why somebody like Kalinjian does make sense to me, because that's an option you don't have. You want the option to be able to put a big center next to Jaren. That doesn't mean you have to have that all the time. That doesn't mean that has to be your starting lineup, your closing lineup. But I think it needs to be in your toolkit. And at the moment, with Steven Adams traded, that tool is not in the toolbox for the Grizzlies. I think that's a tool they need to add one way or another.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
You can read the piece over at the Daily Memphian. It is one of those discussions like...
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly! parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.